Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
We always give the NFL a tremendous amount of credit for making sure that we all know that the NFL is the big dog in town. But man, never is that made more clear than it is during the period of time that could also just be a simple publishing of a PDF. No, we're going to get a week, maybe two.
Yeah.
Out of the NFL schedule release.
You're damn right, Josh.
That's right, baby. Time's ours here, game by game, all 17 games, 18 weeks. We're going to go matchup by matchup. We're going to break down your keys to the game, your matchups to watch. Just straight out of the gate, Joshua Briscoe, Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser, all here. Seth, I mean, go ahead. X-Factor, Chiefs-Cardinals, week one, 325. Clearly, the matchup you're looking for has to be...
Probably, I'm going to go ahead and be controversial and say the most important factor will be how Patrick Mahomes plays.
That's great stuff. Final score, Seth. Let me get a score prediction here.
I am going to say the Chiefs are going to score a gentleman's 1.5.
Don't know that's possible, but I love it. It's going to be hard to set a line on.
I'm sorry. I should give that conversation more respect.
Please take this seriously. Final score now on May 16th.
On May 16th, I'm gonna go with Chiefs 37, Cardinals 19. The Chiefs break out of the gate storming.
Nate Taylor, week two, Thursday Night Football, first game on Amazon Prime, Chiefs Chargers. They don't play the Steelers this year, but we didn't know that until Thursday. No, we did actually.
No, we
go
did.
Ahead. Chiefs Chargers. I mean, go ahead, break it down. Mahomes, Herbert, what else can you say?
No,
Prime,
Josh.
Amazon Prime. Who is that? Kirk Herbstreit? Can you wait for Kirk Herbstreit?
Kirk Herbstreit, Al Michaels, what a duo.
It's going to feel like College Game Day up in this bleep.
Now, Josh, what we did find out was that the Chiefs are not playing the Steelers in the preseason, okay? That was the big revelation, the big reveal on Thursday.
I love how you said whatever that word was supposed to be. That was beautiful. I was going to try to say it myself again, but I don't think I'd be able to do it justice. Okay, the bit's over.
This is why I type. Now, all of this is to say, Chargers, Amazon Prime, why they do this to us? Why? Okay, when you have these two teams that have been eyeing each other all winter, all spring, all summer, to have a three... They can't practice before this game, guys. Now,
no, that's frustrating. That was like, come on.
Like, what are we doing? That is Jags Cardinals, if I've ever seen it, okay? I don't know if they play each other this year, actually. But, all right, Titans-Jags.
No,
Titans-Jags. That's Thursday night, annually. But look, I guess the Chiefs will win that game because they won't have to travel, in the middle of the week for this.
Score, Nate. We're burning daylight.
Andy, and after he does this, I have a real take on this game. I have a real schedule take.
Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in the home opener, excuse me. We all know the record in September. Yes, Justin Herbert broke that record last year, but I got the Chiefs winning 27-20.
Seth, new look, Indianapolis Colts, Matt Ryan, and they have a lot of thoughts on what he's going to look like in that Colts system. No, the bit's over. I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to take the ball back, I'm going to dribble out in the half court for a second. Already talking about basketball makes me sad. My hand hurts more than Chris Paul's. So let's freeze here for a second.
What is your hot take, Seth? What's your hot?
I've got two things. First of all, Josh, I really appreciate that you are willing to record with us like less than 24 hours after burying the Suns on national television.
I turn on my TV
and I see Josh Briscoe draining threes wearing a Dallas Mavericks jersey.
Yeah.
Only now he's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, I always thought you liked Booker, but instead you're smiling at him at the free throw line like he's your worst enemy. It was interesting to see.
Diabolical.
diabolical. So I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, I honestly, I felt like I deserved a longer break than I did after my extended hospital stint. This is harder to be back and doing a show after.
Hey, look, everybody acts tough when they up, Josh. Everybody acts tough. By the way, I just want to walk around in my house and be like, everybody talks tough when they up. Like,
yep.
Wife has no context. My son has no context. just walking around. Just they picked Tobias Harris over me.
I'm sorry, Josh. That's
fine. I feel like Jimmy Butler, but not in that sense, but in the doubled over on the table and the meme from the bubble sort of sense. I'm just, I feel like I've been carrying this team, you know, and I ultimately was let down, this has been, you know, hey, can I currently see right now, because my eyes are full with tears still now, a full 20 hours or so after the game? Yeah, of course. I mean, that is, you know,
would you really call what happened there a game?
Like, I would say they played a game with the Suns. The Mavs played a game with my beautiful snake Suns.
In the same way that my chickens once played a game with a toad that they caught.
Yeah, or that one time that a wolf broke in or a fox broke in. Yeah,
that raccoon played a game with those chickens.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was more like a shoot around just at night.
You're sick, Nate.
And no, it was it's, no.
It's accurate.
I
mean,
the only disagreement is that there's a chance that the Suns might have showed up for a shoot around and they weren't there for the actual game. So I'm not even sure. I mean, I might be giving them too much credit.
This is like the podcasting version of tweeting through it, and I respect you.
Yeah, I will say this has been great for my tweeting through it game because I have no other choice.
Yeah, did a good job with it. You're a good sport. There's always next year. I think Luka
is
getting
Paul,
pretty.
Except for Chris Paul, who's 37.
And I think Luka's getting pretty close to retirement, so you're not gonna have to go through him every year. he's 33, right? Or is that 43?
Yeah.
Did I read that wrong?
He and Chris Paul are both up there. I think there's only about 20 years difference between the two of them.
So I actually have now I have two takes. One, Luka's presence is proof that I think actually I've been wrong for years, and I think Larry Bird would dominate in the modern NBA. I always figured he probably couldn't because he was playing a bunch of insurance salesman looking dudes. But watching, it's not like Luka is like, do you watch Luka and you're like, oh, that dude's a way better athlete than Larry Bird was? I mean, I don't know if I see that.
No, I think you're making some excellent points.
Apparently, having incredible handles and being able to shoot the ball instantaneously from anywhere is a very translatable skill.
Yeah, yeah, it works. So I'd love to agree with you on the complimentary side of that, but I would hate Luka Doncic less if he had kidnapped my entire family.
Wow.
It was, you know, I just don't watch the NBA much. I just don't have time to follow any other sports league because I already spent too much time on the Chiefs, contrary to what this podcast has been so far.
I know.
Far.
Well, we started with some very serious schedule breakdown. So,
but I did get a chance to watch a few glimpses of that game, and whoo, that was like some like 92. And so, Josh, you know, so Michael Jordan was a basketball player back in the 90s, mm-hmm. who was known for being very competitive, and he once played a guy called Clyde Drexler, who people thought was almost as good.
Oh, yes.
The media. Poor Clyde dared to exist.
Yes.
And Michael Jordan decided that could not stand. And that was like, it was a similar feel, like in terms of just like, oh, so he's just not going to miss for a while. That's unfortunate.
Not for an entire half, kids, in game one of the NBA Finals. Nope, Nope.
And that's nope. exactly the feeling like Luka had during that first half. It was like, I'm going to throw this thing up. Yeah, but you're halfway between the three-point line and half court. Yeah, but still. Why not? You know, what's the worst that could happen? It's like, well,
this is the last thing I'll say, Josh. The series went from them literally hunting Luka on every switch in game two to Luka just eviscerating everybody in a Suns uniform. Oh, Chris wants to get this? Fine. Oh, campaign? Get out of here. Which, by the way, the things he did to campaign in Dallas were criminal, okay? Bridges, long, lanky.
Defensive player of the year candidate. Yeah.
Very, very good. Son, you can get this work in the post.
He posted up 7 foot and former Phoenix Sun, DeAndre Ayton.
And son, and Holly was laughing at this because I had to rewind it, but it's like, hey, one of Holly's favorite basketball things is the guy who's like, I'm going to get a charge. I'm going to get my feet down. I'm planted. Hit me in the chest. And he flies back and he starts looking around and saying, why is everybody else continuing to play basketball? Luka did that to, I believe, Mr. Johnson, and he's still sliding. While Luka makes a 30 footer in his face.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it just went from a guy who couldn't defend anybody in game two going nuclear and nobody could defend him in game seven.
Yeah, and also the Suns just didn't think that making a basket would be important at any point from game three on. Chris Paul's body is held together like Scrooge's partner in the Christmas Carol, you know, or just like he's got like just a piece of cloth like holding his jaw in place. Chris Paul's walking around like with ice taped to his quads while trying to effort his way across half court. Yeah, it's bad. So anyway, thanks for coming to my therapy session, everybody. As payment, we'll give you 45 more minutes of Chiefs talk on the other side of this, I guess. Again, to Seth's point on the plus side, at least Luka's already 23 years old. He could drop off at any point now.
Yeah, any point.
So
he's not going to get better.
Most players peak at 23 or 22, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But I have a legitimate take on week two of the schedule.
Yes, hold on, everyone. We're back in Chiefs mode. So if you're about to send us an angry tweet about how we talked about basketball for 4 minutes, won't happen again. Sorry, sir. We apologize.
And to be fair, that was
Chiefs from here on out.
That was more my fault than anything.
Oh, I sure as bleep didn't want to talk about it.
So obviously the Chiefs in week two have their Thursday night game where it's like, hey, this is a huge matchup against, you know, the team that is, I think, supposed to challenge them for supremacy in the AFC West between them and the Broncos. It's like, oh, we might as well throw it on a Thursday night, just right out of the gate. Like, just here's the thing to me that I would say. Every team has to play on Thursday night at some point in the year. Mm-hmm. I would rather, because you've got the shorter turnaround time, which hurts you for, you know, one, for rest, and two, for game planning, right?
Yes.
I would prefer the Thursday night game. If you can't have it be the first week of the year, that it be the second week of the year, because that both of those things that are hindrances, they're not as much of hindrances, right?
100% agree.
You can game plan for the first 2 weeks of the season for the two months that you have.
So you're telling me Andy Reid called the league and manipulated this?
No. Yes. That actually wouldn't stun me now that I'm thinking about it. But
on that note, I'll tell you what, we played this on the radio a couple of times. The NFL, I think I got to grab his name again because it was legit fascinating, is the NFL's VP of broadcast planning, I believe is his official title. He talked for like 5 or 6 minutes about, his name is Mike North. He talked for 5 or 6 minutes about the intricacies of the schedule planning process. And I've always kind of been a sucker for just like somebody with kind of a niche expertise, just explaining it in depth, something I've never even really considered in my life before. He was fascinating. The science of the schedule, I have a legit appreciation for.
Yeah.
If you just Google, like, if you Google Mike North and NFL, try to find a video of him talking about it this year, or you can listen to my podcast feed, I guess. He really was excellent on that front. So I don't know how much sway Andy Reid had, but he was talking about finding the perfect grain of sand. It was actually, like, fascinating.
That is interesting. Well, and I think that's one thing that makes, like, certain things harder to do with the schedule, because there's a lot that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be fair, it's the NFL. They'll make anything work. Nate, remind me, how many games did the NFL have to cancel because of COVID?
It was at least like 5, 6, 7.
Looking at my notes, carry the one. Wow, somehow that equals zero.
Yeah, the NFL is very aware. And Josh, you know, you made a joke about it, but the behemoth that is the NFL is a very real thing, and they know every single game is a lot of money and they will make it happen. And so
And look,
really,
and look,
they could overcome anything.
Yeah, and look, think about it from this way. You know, if Andy Reid wants Andy Reid wants, that's fine. But like, the real culprit here is Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's Jeffrey Bezos.
It's the idea that, like, I mean, you've thought about it. You've heard your friends say that, like, hey, Amazon Prime is a wonderful service. Hey, don't worry about the people who are delivering these packages, but you could get these packages, like, as you're clicking the button.
And it's look, amazing.
You know, you're a person of principle. Until now. Because... your football team.
Everyone's got a price, man.
Because your football team plays its home opener against its division rival on Thursday night. And look, hey, if we rolled out Jags Titans, you would be like, you know, I can catch the highlights. I can look at the box score. Hell, SportsCenter, they got me. You know, but nah. Mm-mm, not with these two quarterbacks. Mm-mm, no. Amazon Prime, in the most, shall we say, unimaginative opening of, hey, we got Al Michaels, and you're going to have to click this button. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it works. Welcome to 2022. It was nice that you use Amazon occasionally. Now you'll use it forever.
That really is, yeah, I mean, I think that really is it. I will make the note that in the I think it was during the draft that was actually announced, you know, that this would be the first Prime game. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs did say that, I don't think we know where yet, but they did say that there would be a local over-the-air broadcast affiliate that would carry this game.
Sure.
We will see where that goes, but just, look, I mean, I want to watch Thursday Night Football this year, and I'm not currently subscribed to Amazon Prime Video, and I'm probably going to have to, so it's going to work regardless. But just if there are any Kansas Cityans right now who are looking to hold out for one more year or something on Amazon, you may be able to, but we don't know all the details of that yet. And maybe Jeff Bezos will buy all broadcast television networks in the Kansas City area and just shut them down. I don't know. I honestly believe he might be capable of anything. So, is there anything else from either of you guys? I'll give you a couple of like highlights through the schedule, a couple of things that I think are kind of noteworthy that people probably already know at this point, honestly. But Thursday Night Football, Week 2, Week 4, Sunday Night Football in Tampa Bay. Week 5, Monday Night Football back in Kansas City against the Raiders. Week 6, Buffalo in Kansas City. That'll be the CBS featured afternoon game. The bye week in Week 8, going into Sunday Night Football at home against the Titans. And then the other primetime game currently scheduled is against the Broncos, who they don't play until Week 14. The two Broncos games are December 11th and January 1st.
Yep.
The one in Denver currently scheduled to be Sunday Night Football. My personal favorite part of the schedule is that they're playing on noon on Christmas Eve at home. So
yeah.
The NFL largely, at least for us, you know, kept Christmas kind of where it's supposed to be. We're not going to have to be doing any post-game shows late into Christmas Eve or getting in on Christmas morning to Arrowhead. So I'm happy about that. But those are kind of the things that jumped out to me. Either of you guys have anything that jumps out? 3 out of 4 of those first 4 games on the road. They got a 3-game road stretch in December. Also, last thing, 9 road games this year, 17-game schedule. So if it seems like there's an extra road game, there is.
Yes, correct, because you got an Aaron Rodgers-less Packers team at home as the 9th home game last year. Look, I think the games that truly matter are Buffalo. Yet again, like, Buffalo's got to be like, why we got to go to Arrowhead, man? Like, why? And Cincinnati on December 4th. I wrote it in The Athletic that, like, sure, there's a lot of intriguing games, but I think from a revenge factor, it'll be interesting to see where the Bengals are now that they have expectations truly placed upon them. And I think this is the first time, and tell me if I'm wrong, fellas, but this is the first time where I really believe, like, you know, it's a different team going up against Tampa Bay because we will essentially be 2 years removed. And by the way, like, the Chiefs will have a completely different offensive line, which, you know, sorry. for the Bengals game, there are enough characters on both sides that are involved. Obviously, the Ja'Marr Chase element still exists. And given that the Bengals are the first team to beat the Chiefs, you know, back to back, really in the Mahomes era in a same season outside of Tom Brady when he was with the Patriots, I think this is the first time where the Chiefs can go into a game fully believing that they are the hunter instead of the hunted, which is obviously a new twist on this new era or this new sort of regime that is, you know, revolving around Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
In terms of things standing, I think everything Nate just said is accurate. I mean, one thing I would say is everyone's talking about how hard a schedule it is right now, and it might be a super hard schedule. I have no idea. But it's worth noting, like, I mean, we just don't know what any of these teams are going to look like. We don't. Mm-hmm. Teams fall apart. Teams get way better. We have no idea. No one would have pegged Cincinnati as being the team to beat the Chiefs. I still can't believe they lost.
Correct. Yep.
I'm still pissed about that, honestly. But it's anyway. I just said pissed. Goodness.
I was gonna see if you would keep going. Like, are we gonna get an F bomb? Like Seth just said pissed on the podcast twice. No, of course not.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
I'm glad you did.
I am aggravated. I'm very peeved.
Say but crap.
I would just say
how it feels.
One team that I feel for is Buffalo. Like Cincinnati, I think they're kind of done playing with house money, but I mean, they get to be the team like, nah, we've got the Chiefs number. We're the giant killer. Like we're the giant now, you know, all that. Right. Mm-hmm. And hey, their fan base Chiefs fans, if you're listening, Bengals fans get to talk mad trash to you. And that's just it. That's how it works. This is how the game is played. Remember that every time you say something terrible to a Broncos fan. which, man, can you imagine if the Chiefs sweep them again this year? Oh, that would be so sweet. So that's actually one thing that stands out to me. Not that we didn't know they'd be playing Denver twice, but I can't help but notice that the schedule makers are giving Russell Wilson a lot of time to acclimate to his new environment before he faces Spagnuolo's weird defenses and the Chiefs. That annoys me a little bit, but I don't care that much. But man, if you're the Broncos, you've got to beat the Chiefs at least once this year. Like you can't get swept for like the ninth year in a row or whatever it is. But with the Bills game, I feel bad for the Bills to an extent because no matter what happens, they thumped the Chiefs last year during the regular season, like beat them pretty badly. And it still didn't matter in the playoffs. Mm. Because Mahomes did some stuff. And so, which, by the way, here's just a little treat for anyone. Go rewatch that divisional round game again. I know the AFC Championship stunk. That was a bummer how it ended, all that stuff. Seriously, though, I thought it would ruin that game for me. I went back and rewatched it the other night. Absolutely does not. That fourth quarter was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
Just absolute crazy. And it's so much fun. And so really, if you're Buffalo, that's a big game for you. But really, what's your best case scenario? You blow the Chiefs out? What does that mean? Well, you don't know. Because it really didn't mean that much last year. So I just, all of this is interesting. But I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. You know what I mean? I've had people email me saying, you know, if the Chiefs can just win like, you know, four of those first seven, they'll be good to go. And to me, like they could really start off the season 2-5 and I'd still be like, man, they really need to win some games. But we saw last year that they can push through adversity and we'll kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, two little things from what you guys just mentioned. One, on the Broncos front, you're right that those two games being that late gives him a lot of time to get comfortable in that offense. Also, I don't hate that Russell Wilson's going to have to play at Arrowhead on January 1st, or frankly, even in Denver early in December. Like the Seahawks stadium is open air, partial roof, I think technically. But I don't think of Russell Wilson as somebody who is going to be the guy with the type of cannon you want throwing through blustering winter winds or whatever. So, I think that's kind of interesting. Also, the AFC West is going to look some way at some point by week 14. So that's going to make that all really interesting. And they'll be done playing the Chargers by week 11. They go 2-11 for the Chargers and 14-17 for the weeks against the Broncos. But you guys are right, obviously, about, you know, but the schedule is so hard, whatever. I would say looking beyond the bye week, maybe looking beyond week 6 is particularly silly.
Yep.
But I do think that it's kind of interesting to look at the first 2 weeks, first 4 weeks, maybe first 6 weeks because the Chiefs for the first time are doing this from a tremendous position of early season uncertainty. Like whenever you talk about how different the team has looked, the new offensive line was the only thing we asked about through what felt like 6 months of training camp. You know, we were just, so what about this offensive line? Well, now we got to see what they look like against the Cardinals or Chargers or Colts, where the Chargers, at least in particular, that's a game that you'd put yourself behind the eight ball by losing that game that early in the season. So
for sure,
is George Karlaftis going to be completely reliable right out of the gate?
Woo.
Question now is that is even more important because the option that we thought might be there isn't going to be. So unless either of you guys really want to get a record prediction off, which I think we've all probably signed off on seeming kind of silly right now, I would like to spend a few minutes talking about who is not going to be rushing the passer for the Chiefs this year, or maybe at least until halfway through the season when they get him for a sixth round pick.
Wow. I hadn't put that together, which, you know, it's always fun in like middle of May, before OTAs have started, and all of a sudden I'm like, why is my phone like doing phone things? And you're like, really? Really? I just want to, by the way, I'm, you know, this happens to a lot of people. So I'm not, I am not, unique in this, but you know, I just wanted to hang out with my kid at the park, and and sometimes you just make reasonable decisions, and I was just like, I, what I'm saying is, I was really Larry David in it out there. I actually stopped what I was doing and was like, you know. So continue, Josh.
Well, so Melvin Ingram, after being placed, having the UFA tag placed on him a little bit ago, Brett Veach talked about that shortly thereafter as well. He's a Miami Dolphin, and I believe that I saw today or maybe late yesterday that his contract's for about $5 million.
Yeah,
the Chiefs tag would have given him 4.4.
Correct. Or four? Yeah, yeah, four. Yeah.
I think I saw 4.4.
Yeah. Right. In the low fours. 4.2 is what I had seen. But I mean, like, it was going to, by the way, before you, I'm sorry. Now I feel like I've interrupted.
No, go ahead.
In an unfortunate manner. But what the tag, my understanding is what the tag illustrated to the Dolphins, which was the team most likely to compete for Melvin Ingram's services with the Chiefs, was you have to go around 5 to 5.5 million to make it worth Melvin's time for him to show up. And of course, because I had not put these two, you know, this projection out like you did, Josh, this is exactly what happened last offseason, where the Chiefs were like, hey, you seem to fit the system. We'd love to have you. How about 3.5? How about, you know, like we're still kicking some money around. It's a little tight. You know, they just work with us. And then the Steelers, I think, gave him $4 million. And he was just like, sign. And there was voids in the contract. And I think it was like they gave him a larger than usual signing bonus, which is why he played on like, what, $1 million last year was his base salary. Mm-hmm. And so all this was to signal to the Dolphins, like, hey, if you really want him, you're going to have to pay him more than what we are sort of, what our parameters are set with this tender. And then Melvin Ingram, who I think was in an interesting position because he has a path towards starting with the Dolphins. I think that path is probably easier with the Chiefs, but they were willing to give him $5 million and no state income tax and sunny weather. And all right, that's what he chose to do. So this is 2 years now. Where Melvin Ingram, who knows he's in sort of the back end of his career, is like, where the money at?
Yeah. And before people get fired up about percentages of stuff, $600,000 is a lot of money. Like, that's just a lot of money. You know what I mean? And that's something.
It's a lot of money in your salary. It is not a lot of money in the Chiefs' current salary cap.
So that particular hang up for me.
No, I don't begrudge Melvin Ingram whatever his logic is. And also, like Nate said, you know, $600,000, and also no taxes down there. Yep. So, you know, that turns into a lot more than $600,000, I guess. Maybe he wanted to be in Miami, whatever. I said this is the closest I got, I think, to ending up being dunked on whenever the Chiefs traded for him, and then he was good last year. My logic was, well, but you decided you're willing to give up a six to go get him mid-season.
Isn't $600,000 worth that?
When did you stop putting your little paddle up in the air at the auction? You know, like, oh, we'll give you $5 million. Like, they're going to give him $4.4 million.
And I think with the tag, you have to set it at something, and then the Chiefs have an opportunity to match, right?
They do not. There is not specifically matching. Language. Yeah. It is
so
a compensatory. It's basically like, hey, here's what we will give you this if you sign here at this point. This is your number, and if you go somewhere else, we'll get that you added to our compensatory pick formula, which is nice. The Chiefs will get something in return here, like they would have just losing him in free agency earlier.
Likely a sixth.
So full circle. I also, this is really, don't indulge me on this one because Seth isn't going to be with us that much longer on this particular episode and we got stuff to talk about. But why wouldn't they have put this tag on Tyrann Mathieu knowing that he was not going to come back on a cheap 1-year deal? I don't know why this isn't a loophole that more teams use. Anyway, there's probably a reason for it. I've just wondered that to myself. I don't know. Do you feel like you just use that on anyone that you know you're going to lose after if they don't sign during the
That's an interesting hill to go down. I just want to vent for a second.
Yes, please do. That was my one thing that honestly I'm floating out there. If someone in our audience has an absolute expertise, if Brant Tillis wants to text me, I just am kind of curious if that's a loophole that teams would use. Anyway, back to you.
So I had a bunch of people. I basically tweeted out like, I don't like this. And I proceeded to have my mentions filled with people explaining, well, you know, youth movement. And I was like, I get
it. Stop looking at your mentions. Problem solved.
I feel bad ignoring people. I already ignore way too many people, honestly. So here's the thing, because one of the rebuttals that I hear is, well, the Chiefs pass rush was bad last year anyways. That's like when people said when, you know, the offense was bad, right? And they had Jamal Charles. It's like, well, the offense stinks with him. So who cares? It's like, okay. We all know football is a team sport. And if your argument is that guy alone, all by himself, is not enough to carry an offense, or in Melvin Ingram's case, generate pass rush consistently, I would agree. Here's what I can't figure out. So with this guy that you can look at his film and see that he played well, not incredibly, but well, above average, consistently.
The only guy to get a sack in the AFC Championship game.
Yep. And so, and a guy who just, he's a good player. Again, not a great player, but a good player. If someone were to say to me, well, you need more than two good pass rushers to have a consistently good pass rush, I would say, absolutely, I agree. But getting rid of one of them is not the answer. And that's where, like, I just don't understand this disconnect. And I understand people want to believe the team's got good reasons for doing stuff. I'm sure they do, whatever. But to me, your pass rush was a problem last year. And this was such an easy solution. And is Melvin Ingram a game breaker? No, he's not. But you want to at least avoid taking a step backwards and give yourself more of an opportunity to move forwards. Could they still be a better pass rush this year? Sure. But now you've added other things that need to go right. And it's just frustrating to me when this kind of nickel and diming of competent players drives me crazy when you're handing out. I'm still not over the Clark contract, the Hitchens contract, and the Watkins contract. Mm-hmm. And who knows? Maybe this is a whole like, hey, lesson learned. We have decided to become a team that sets a number and will not go over it. And if that's the cost of doing business, fair enough. I do think that I find myself frustrated the moments where it seems like they set these hard lines in the sand with players that can help, as opposed to sometimes when it seems like they'll open up a blank checkbook to players that I don't think move the needle. Mm. And that's frustrating for me, but that's just a matter of probably analyzing players differently. Except in this case, I know they thought Ingram was helpful. because they said it. And we all know Andy Reid never lies to the media. So, but I mean, it was just so obvious. And so it's just a frustrating thing. It's something that I'm writing about right now is the pass rush was clearly a concern. They had an opportunity for maybe the pass rush to be better this year. Mm-hmm. If Ingram comes back and Karloftis is an above average rookie, right? Let's say he's a decent pass rusher as a rookie, which is not a guarantee, people. Mm-hmm. I know they took him in the first round, but that's hard to do well consistently. He'll probably have some good games, but doing it well consistently is incredibly hard as a rookie. But you had a chance there, right? Because now you've added an extra guy to the mix. Now you've added an extra guy, but now you've lost a guy, and so you still don't have enough guys. And that's like, you need guys. You need bodies. And I'm beyond frustrated by this because it just feels like this offseason has been a little more two steps forward than three steps back for me.
Let me ask you both each one question. Just give me the simplest answer you can think of to give me these. Seth, what do you think is something, a prediction you could confidently make about the level of play George Karloftis will have specifically in his rookie season?
Confidently?
Yeah, not 100%, but 80% confidence interval. George Karloftis will at least do this.
I would have confidence that he will have some games where he's an above average pass rusher.
Nate, how many games is Frank Clark going to play this year?
Because he is theoretically in a contract year, I'm going to give him 14 games. Now, are those 14 games going to be high-level play? Well, that remains to be seen. But Frank is in a position where he needs to have a quiet offseason, which, as of May 16th, that is occurring. He needs to remain healthy. And he needs to get through training camp in the preseason smoothly so that he can play those 14 games at the best that he is capable of. I know there are 17 games in the season, and I know this is a bit optimistic, but from a contractual standpoint, that would be a good move for him when he enters free agency, which is likely the destination after this upcoming season ends.
Here's what I would add there. Last year, Alex Okafor played 41% of the Chiefs' snaps. Mike Dana played 47. Frank Clark played 59. Chris Jones, obviously some inside, some outside. I don't have the splits there. He played 56% total. Melvin Ingram played 31% of the Chiefs' snaps. Obviously, he was only here for half a season. Either Alex Okafor is coming back on a third consecutive, just one-year deal, or Mike Dana and I guess Josh Kando are about to get some work.
Yep.
Like, I think George Karloftis probably leads this edge group in total snaps taken. That's the thing I'm planting my flag in, and even more so now, because just if he comes off the field, all of a sudden, those rumblings of Malik Herring hype that started in minicamp had better continue through St. Joe, because this group is shallow as bleep right now, man. It is a rookie, a veteran who has been hurt and inconsistent, the most perfectly average rotational edge in football, in Mike Dana, which I mean is mostly a compliment. It's hard to do. And then Josh Kando, who has not been an impact player since high school. That is the edge rotation right now.
Yes.
I don't think Melvin Ingram was going to single-handedly change this pass rush, to your point earlier, Seth. But right. Holy goodness, it is shallow. It is shallow through the depth, and it is uncertain at the top.
And that's a terrible combination of things to be. And that's the only point, is this hurts it. Does it hurt it a tremendous amount? No. But when you don't have let me put it this way. I'm trying to think. I got a good buddy named Wes, who's in fantastic shape for us. He's a dude in his early 40s. He's in great shape. He's taking care of himself.
Interesting that you would talk about your friend Wes and not your friend Josh, who's also in incredible shape, but that's fine.
I was good.
Did you choke on something there? You okay?
Sorry, that just made me laugh.
That's weird. I wasn't joking.
If Wes were to gain 10 pounds, that's probably not ideal for him. Fellas our age. If I were to gain 10 pounds, now I weigh 240, and there's a problem because I'm 5'9 on a good day. 5'9 and a half. He's got to do the short guy obligatory add that half inch.
At that point, it's basically 5'10". 5'10" is basically eight. Six.
Yeah. It might as well be 5'10". You're right. Good point, Josh. But I mean, here's the point to that. There is, I could have just used my wife, I guess, as a frame of reference. Her gaining 10 pounds and me gaining 10 pounds.
No. I got to look out for you sometimes.
It's so much worse if I do it,
No, it's just, no, Seth, listen, I know I'm not married. I know you've been married for a while, and I know that you guys have, you know, a wonderful relationship, but I just want to, sometimes I got to help you help yourself.
Right on the hand, right on the grenade there. I appreciate it.
I walk you up to the cliff all the time. This time I saw you sprinting at the cliff from 20 yards away. It's like, I got to stop him.
You came in and tackled me from the side. But so me and my friend Wes will continue with that. Because I'm on the edge, man. And by on the edge, I mean I probably should have stopped gaining weight about 20 pounds ago. I'm on the edge is how I'm choosing to view it. And gaining 10 pounds when you're on the edge is way worse when you gain 10 pounds and you're already in great shape. The Chiefs are on the edge at best and probably should have not put on the last 20 pounds they put on, if you know what I'm saying. And so it's a messy analogy, but it works because it's a much bigger deal to lose a competent player when you are already on the edge than this offseason they signed Von Miller and Randy Gregory, but no, Melvin Ingram walked. Well, then we wouldn't care as much. Right. It's just frustrating because it pushes you that much more over the edge, like it's going to when I eat a bunch of Reese's peanut butter cups tonight.
But Seth, what happens when you get towards the season and, you know, some people say he didn't come into the season in shape. And then other people say, well, he's got to play his way into shape. And you don't even really care until the midway point of the season. And then, you know, even though there are trades, even though there are people that are, you know, brought off the street with 10-day contracts tied to them, what if, just hear me out, what if you thought your team was out of shape, and then the next thing you know, he's the best player on the court?
Is that about Seth's friend Wes or Mike Dana? Or I think I lost the analogy.
This is Hope Springs Eternal.
Yeah. No, this is about Luka Doncic.
Everything is. Sports talk, my nightmares, it's just everywhere. I can't look away from him. I look in the mirror and I see him.
Everybody said he didn't care about defense. Everybody said he came out of shape. Everybody said, you know, he dilly-dallying out there. And, you know, he got away with it. He got away with it. The regular season is trash.
He got away with it because the Suns point guard's older than Seth.
That was mean and accurate. That was really good. That is something when you think about it, because I chainsaw one tree down yesterday and I'm exhausted. So you know what? Respect to Chris Paul for being able to play 3 games in a series. But Seth, he just played 7.
He played two. Yeah. Seth, I can hear you getting far away from your microphone. I know you need to dip, but I wanted to see if we can get one last minute of analysis from you. Also, you mentioning chainsawing one tree. At some point, I do want to just get I want to submit a mailbag question to you guys to talk about just like general homeownership and like yard maintenance. I've been having an incredible couple of weeks in that regard, and I just want to talk about it more. I won't force that in today's show, but really quick, if you've got the 30 seconds to spare,
I've got time.
Oh, well, then let's go ahead and get into it then. Because Nate and I can circle back on Ingram if we want or schedule stuff. But since our last episode, you had 3 more film reviews come out on the rookie class looking at Brian Cook, Leo Chanel, and Darian Kennard. People need to go look at these. Again, mnchiefsfan.substack.com for the newsletter. You've got the clips. You've got all the logic behind all of this. But I was wondering if you could give us, like, maybe it's not even the biggest thing, but one big thing from each of these guys, something that you recognize that maybe you didn't see in other analysis, something you see in how they fit with the Chiefs, something that you learned in that process, but just something that you think Chiefs fans ought to know before they, you know, buy their jerseys or decide what the depth chart should look like.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just go in order. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Brian Cook is a pick that I really like. I really like every one of the Chiefs picks all the way through the 5th round. And I say that with a caveat. I'm not saying I don't like the 7th rounders, but I just haven't really looked at their film. Yep. And there's a caveat there. Josh Williams. Look, if someone listening to this has some all 22 from like, you know, Central Lakes College from Brainerd, Minnesota, or wherever Joshua Williams went to college. That's great. Please send it to me because I don't have it anywhere.
Disrespect for Fayetteville State on this podcast will not stand.
You know what? I forgot that it was Fayetteville State. So good. That is better. So anyway, there's no all 22 that I can find. So I just don't know with him. I know he tests well. He looks like he moves smoothly and he's huge, which is awesome. I mean, all those things are great. So with these guys, though, I mean, the draft class, I liked the night that they picked them and I like them more now that I've looked at the film. And that includes these three guys that I wrote about. Brian Cook. One thing I really like with him is normally you have to pick with safeties. And by that, I mean, you need a guy who is either a thumper safety or he's a guy with some range. And Brian Cook can do both. Similar to Justin Reed in that respect. You're not having to pick. Like Juan Thornhill's a guy who will go for it, but he doesn't arrive heavy, right? He's built a little lean. Brian Cook arrives pretty heavy. Now he gets run over a few times because he's still, you know, he weighs 200, 205. Like he's not, you know, you line up like that against a tight end every now and then you're going to get blasted. But he plays super physical, but he also has really good range. I love the idea of him, depending on how he adjusts mentally, everything I read about him is super positive in that regard. I love the idea of him taking Dan Sorensen's place. As a guy who can actually be that hybrid linebacker slash safety and not just essentially an undersized linebacker because he can't play safety anymore, which is where Sorensen was at that point, right? So that's like a takeaway with Brian Cook. I think he's got a path to seeing snaps early. Leo Chanel is a maniac. He really, like, usually sometimes with dudes that talk, you know, kind of say, I'm addicted to hitting people and stuff. You're like, ah, sure you are. And then you watch the film, you're like, dude, are you okay? Like, are you actually, like, do you have a problem? Like, is everything okay at home? Like, it's like the old joke. There's an old joke where, like, two guys are looking at a horse and the one guy says to the other guy, he's like, you know what we ought to do? We ought to melt down that horse and use it to stick stuff to other stuff. And there's a pause and the guy looks at me and goes, Ed, is everything okay at home? it's just a classic. Anyway, whoever invented glue was sick. And then in the meantime, Leo Chanel, his tape was more dominant than I expected for a dude that dropped to the third. And I think that was partly a usage issue because the modern NFL, I'll put it this way. 5 years ago, I think he might be a first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
He moves very fast downhill. And the thing is, he's got some sideline to sideline speed too. Like, I mean, he tested as an incredible athlete, like as good or better athlete than Willie Gay Jr. I don't think he shows the same fluidity that Gay shows. He doesn't quite explode in change of directions the way that Willie Gay Jr. can. But he does explode. He can accelerate really well, and that's in all directions. He just doesn't have a great back pedal. But in terms of some of those zone drops the Chiefs asked their linebackers to do, he showed more than enough athleticism to do that. And he's also, he's another guy, like with Brian Cook, you normally have to pick, right? Okay, I want a guy who can line up as a Sam linebacker, who can line up on the edge and take on tight ends and occasionally even tackles, set the edge sometimes, blitz, and maybe drop into coverage in a pinch, but not too much. Or I want a guy with some range who can kind of, you know, go sideline to sideline, right? You need either, you know, Reggie Ragland or, you know, pick some small, fast linebacker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not as big as Ragland because Ragland's like a DN disguised as a linebacker. But Chanel can play Sam. He can line up on the edge and dominate tight ends.
Can he play edge?
I've had more people ask me that, and I get
look,
why.
Look, it may be a four-man front, but it's really a five-man front.
And that's, I think you're going to see a lot of that. He's a gifted blitzer who actually, as a pass rusher, can do some stuff. Now, he doesn't show bend. So, like, people are like, you know, he's kind of similar measurable to T.J. Watt. For one, not really, because you're talking multiple arm length inches. Micah Parsons has freakish bend. Those are just things that are different. Now,
yeah.
He is unusually strong, and he's unusually fast. I think you're going to see some five-man stuff with him. I think he could make an impact early, but he's another guy where normally you have to choose, and you don't have to. They got more physical and more athletic with him. And then, oh, man, my wife's calling me. I'm going to get killed, but that's okay. So
Hold on. You want to just pick it up and put it on speakerphone?
No, I'm genuinely afraid. I don't need to have my gonads snatched off
Listen,
in front of my entire audience.
I helped you out earlier in this show, and you're about to say what it would be like if she gained 10 pounds. I feel like you owe me this one.
She would be just as beautiful as ever, is what I was going
to
say.
You don't need to go back to that. Well, that's fine. You can talk about Darren Kennard and then answer your wife's phone call.
Oh, my goodness. She's okay. All right. We're doing this. Hey, babe, I got you here on speakerphone with Times Ours with Josh and Nate. How's it going?
Oh, great. Well, you said you'd be home at 5:15 and our company is here. So I don't know. Are you on your way?
I am on my way right
now. He's driving.
Second.
He's in the car.
All right. I love you. I'll see you soon.
We love you.
Bye.
We do it for y'all, guys. We do it for y'all.
I'm sweating.
So am I.
She's only being nice because you guys are listening. Darren Kennard has a legitimate shot to start at right tackle. His tape
is
better than someone who
fell
with the
thanks,
round. Seth. I gotta go.
No, that's fine. We'll read you on the Substack later. She said you'd be home at 5:15. It is 5:40.
It happens.
See you guys.
I didn't know you had company over. You could have said you had company coming.
Look. We understand that we just do it for y'all is all I'm saying. Dear listener, we love you. Thank you. It's not every day you get to hear Miss Jazz. So, you know, as much as you would like more from us, we're trying to create unique audio content for you. But no, he's alive. He's fine. Now, if you want to ask me about one of his limbs, well, that I'm not sure, Your Honor. But he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
He'll be fine. I don't think she's gonna hurt him. Not physically. I thought that was withering just by the way she said, "Oh, hi guys." Like I felt like that was I can't believe you did this to me.
Well, look, if I have to be a meat shield, Then this is, you know, this is my honor.
That's what I'm saying. If Jazz texts me, like, oh yeah, no, he's been in the car. I'm pretty sure he's almost there. He left right whenever
just
he said he was
going. Just a couple more lights, and I'll be right there.
I've been getting all the traffic. All that
Minnesota
traffic.
Can't believe these red lights I'm getting. Woo! We should anyway. Honestly do the next episode with just the two of us so that it leads to speculation about Steph's whereabouts.
I think that's a great idea. I think we should just say, welcome to the latest edition of Times R. Seth Kaiser no longer with us. Not with us. We'll keep it vague and open-ended.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, so the good news is we now have reached basically the end of the show. Was there anything on Cook, Chanel, or Kennard that you thought was particularly noteworthy? I've got something on the right tackle position.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah. You know, I got to see Chanel a little bit during the rookie.
Oh, God. Yeah. Rookie minicamps happened since our last episode.
Yeah. It's fine. believe me, kids. It's fine. There is, you know, there's a lot of excitement. But these are rookies, and imagine starting, you know, it's funny, like, I was trying to explain this to Holly, but it's like, you know, why do they do rookie minicamps? By the way, why do they do rookie minicamps on Mother's Day weekend? Are they heathens? And it's like, well, business is business. So it's like, hey, some of these kids, I think, haven't graduated from college, or like they're in the process of, like, you know, doing whatever is necessary to get their diplomas if they're seniors. Obviously, some of these kids are juniors and they're, you know, they got to figure out whatever their situation is. So there's all that. There's all the personal stuff. Hey, you've never been to Kansas City from before. I love Brian just being like, yeah, I didn't even know y'all had barbecue, dog. Like y'all known for barbecue, and it's like, yeah, man. It's fine, dude. It's fine. He's like,
it's fine. It's rookie camp.
He's like, man, all I know all my life is Cincinnati, and we were like, well, son, your horizons are about to be a lot broader. So there's all that, but it's you. think about however you started your career or your profession, ladies and gentlemen, and just imagine the first day being everybody else's first day and how outrageously chaotic it looks. They call it a football practice. I'm not sure that's what I watched Saturday or Sunday, honestly. But I did get to see Leo Chenal play some Sam, play some Mike. He has some, if he can get there, and that'll be the big question. If he can get there, I think he does track the ball pretty well. You know, this was the hard part for Nick Bolton, where like you could see it sort of translate, but it's like, dude, these are the most accurate men who throw a football in the entire planet. So it's not the SEC. Like, it's just, it's not, my man. So obviously Nick Bolton had a really nice, I would say, development as someone who dropped in the zone, like Seth mentioned, and was able to make plays on the ball sort of in that November, December part of the season. And so maybe Leo Chenal has similar traits. He is a pretty charismatic person in terms of you can just understand his passion for the game. I know we're going to talk about Kennard here in a minute, and I think those are the most intriguing matchups, and I wrote about it just between him and Carl Loftus. Cook did not do anything because of a shoulder, and Sky Moore did not do anything because of a hamstring. So we will get, I will have more detailed updates on them when we get to the OTA periods, which is later this month.
One other thing there also that I did think was interesting for minicamps is that Justin Ross was out there. Like,
yes.
And even hearing from Andy Reid on that, I know that that was a topic in his presser. I think you asked one of the questions about it. Did you have the orthotics answer, I believe?
Yeah. how is feet looking, coach?
But what was interesting there, that the impression that I got from Andy Reid is that Justin Ross, obviously lots of medical issues with his spine out of, you know, that derailed his career at Clemson, really. And then also the foot issue that seemed like, you know, more of an active concern. Now, Andy Reid sounded like that Justin Ross was in a rust phase, not a rehab phase. Like, not that he was going to right. still be by training camp, like working on a particular pitch count or anything. Like, just he hasn't played meaningful football right now.
You know, as I try to tell people, I see that and I understand that. You know, the way I wrote it, Josh, was that, you know, you could basically treat him, they basically treated him as if he was a limited participant, if this was like a real practice.
Yeah.
And so again, if Andy Reid says he's fine, if Brett Veach says he's cleared, we haven't heard from Rick Burkholder yet, which may happen later on this summer or as we get started into training camp. But I just think they're gonna be extremely cautious with him. And so if he picks things up by mandatory minicamp, I think that's a really positive sign.
Yeah.
One of the things that, like, I don't want to do, because you're trying to understand the rhythm of, like, the practice and understanding why the coaching staff is having the guys do this or do that or the certain situations. But I think one of the things I'll have to keep in mind with my notebook is, as I watch these practices through their entirety, is how many reps does Justin Ross do? And are those increased from week one to week two, week two to week three, as we get to mandatory minicamp? But that may be something that I have to keep in mind, just because it was clear that they saw him run some routes, and then these rookie quarterbacks, who I shall not name, would not throw him the football. And I was like, why are we here then? Which, by the way, if Sky Moore is not really out there, if Cornell Powell is not really out there, I mean, throw the kid some balls, guys. Like, get him some targets. But they didn't really target him until Monday. And I just think that was a very methodical approach from Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, you know, Matt Nagy and the like, from the coaching staff. And hopefully we see more with the veterans. And hopefully those talented traits really translate, because there's so much hype about him, and I want him to have some success, obviously, just from a human standpoint. But you also know, too, that, like, there's a reason this is the highest level. And for however this goes, I just want to see him in training camp in pads, and that to be, like, the real indicator. But between then and now, there's a lot of work to do to make sure that he is knocking off rust and not the other R word that is rehab.
Yeah. And then to the tackle position, the one thing that I was going to say is just that the the combination of Andrew Wiley, Lucas Niang, Darian Kennard, and then also the tackle that they signed as a free agent out of Houston, Jerron Christian. Mm-hmm. Those four guys are going, in my book, again, obviously they all have their questions. Rookie, injured, maybe a lower ceiling on Wiley, maybe a lower ceiling on Christian. Those four guys combined are going to create one competent starter and one competent swing tackle in my opinion. Like or at least that's sort of what I would bet on at this point. So I am not particularly concerned about who starts where, just because I feel pretty good about that unit covering those bases, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, for as much as George Karlaftis had clearly the look of like, oh, he the best dude on the field. There were times, and this is in rookie minicamp, there were times where I thought, and I kind of wrote about this, where Kennard adjusted, and then you got to see Karlaftis adjust to Kennard's adjustment, and then you can sort of see, honestly, those were the reps that only mattered. Like, I can't be more direct. Now, there were times where, you know, I wrote about Justin Ross and Trick McDuffie. That was one rep. Like, I don't think there was any real reps where I could say one or the other definitively did anything against the other, except for that one rep on Monday. And from a writing standpoint, hallelujah. Thanks, coach. Thank you. Because I watched a whatever hour practice on Sunday, on Mother's Day, for y'all to not throw the ball to Justin Ross in the 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 periods. And then they did it on Monday in the red zone period. And so I appreciate you, coach, because we got to write about some guys now. But the only refs that really mattered were really Karlaftis and Kennard, I believe, that like will mean something moving forward. There was some stuff with Joshua Williams. You know, you kind of see what he's got in terms of length and you know, his change of direction. I know people were somewhat concerned about. I don't know, guys. It's one rep in practice. But, like, Trent McDuffie, he's fine. He's good. Like, by the way, didn't really thought about him because he was out here covering guys. And it's not a padded practice. Like, these are padless practices. We can only glean so much for them. But, you know, hey, Justin Ross had a very nice moment on Monday, and we got to talk to him on Sunday, I believe. So, all of this is to say is I think Andrew Wiley still has the edge. This is not, and I want to make this clear, this is not the Trey Smith path. There was no one in front of Trey Smith outside of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif who had not played football in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as people want to say, and as I think even Kennard sort of aligned himself with Trey Smith, because obviously they both played in the SEC, and, you know, Kennard is a very smart human being and knows that, hey, if Trey Smith has success, there's a real opportunity for me here. And that's true. But Andrew Wiley exists. Andrew Wiley is good. And I think Chiefs fans just need to acknowledge that. Like, say it with me, guys. Andrew Wiley is a good football player.
He's a good football player.
And
I'm good with that.
And Darian Kennard will have to exceed expectations in a similar manner to Trey Smith, and he still might not win the job. Because, again, Andrew Wiley is a good football player.
Okay, there we go. There's a show for you. We will we'll stop it there. If you want to read more about Justin Ross's one interesting snap, you know, that's a lead in one of Nate's recent stories from minicamp. Also, more on the schedule and all of that stuff that we talked about from Seth is at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Of course, all of Nate's work is up at theathletic.com. And if you're not subscribed to Times Ours, wherever you get your podcasts, what are you waiting for? Just search up Times Ours. Tell a friend. Whatever, you know, yes. Tell an enemy, tell a member of your family. And you can also follow all of us on Twitter for more at by Nate Taylor, at Real MN Chiefs Fan, at JB Briscoe. That's it. That's the show. Schedule set. Nate, get us out of here.
Josh, I know you're hurting, but I've been hurting for hours longer because I just love Giannis. I love him. I thought he was going to drag the Bucks across the finish line in Boston a third time. And he just, you know, sometimes Patrick Mahomes doesn't get your team to the Super Bowl. And sometimes Giannis gets tired. It's a weird phenomenon. But I just want to say, my friend, I'm hurting alongside with you because I just, he's so good. And, you know, Boston had a better team. So.
Yeah, if only Giannis had done something last year to perhaps dull the pain.
Well, I mean, you know, I didn't want you to necessarily speak to that, but like, that's why he was so great and why he is so great. And, you know, them boys was 2 wins away from just a lot being different. And, you know, it's that's why we love sports. Because the hope is what kills you, and last year experience is not this year experience.